Welcome to PostStatus Draft, the official podcast for PostStatus, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, I talk with Patrick Rolland. Before Patrick went out on his own, he was the product manager for WooCommerce at Automattic. He was at WooCommerce for several years, even prior to the acquisition by Automattic. Patrick's an e-commerce expert, and he's actually doing a remote conference called the Liftoff Summit, where you can learn from a lot of e-commerce professionals and people that are in the weeds. Patrick and I talk about e-commerce, things that are good and bad in the ecosystem, a lot of strategies and tools, and we talk a little bit about his own journey into entrepreneurship as well. If you enjoy this podcast, you get a lot more quality news and analysis from the PostStatus Club. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 900 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Pagely. Pagely helps the world's biggest brands scale and secure WordPress. They're a great host. I host my own website on Pagely. And if you're listening to this and you're an e-commerce fan, then know that Pagely works great with all the major e-commerce players in the WordPress space. It's fully hosted on AWS, and it's secure and stable and fast. I love my friends at Pagely. Check out more at pagely.com. And thank you for the team at Pagely for being a PostStatus partner. Now, here's our show. Hello and welcome to the PostStatus Draft podcast. I have a special guest with me today. Patrick Rolland is an e-commerce expert. He runs Liftoff Summit, and he is newly self-employed. Is that the term we're using, Patrick?
Yeah, let's go self-employed. I like it.
You're doing a variety of things these days, courses, blogging. Are you doing consulting or...
I'm doing a little bit. I've done a little bit right after I left Automattic, and it's good money. But one of the frustrating things is that I don't have like complete control over a thing. So I'll make a recommendation and the other company will go, neat. And then it doesn't happen. And I find that very frustrating. So I don't know how much more of that I'm going to do.
I gotcha. So you just mentioned Automattic. You worked at Automattic via the WooThemes acquisition. So you worked for WooThemes prior to it being rebranded WooCommerce. This gets complicated. So when did you start working for WooThemes, the makers of WooCommerce?
I worked for them for about 3 years, and about a year of that was at Automattic. So I think that was right after WooCommerce 2.0 came out.
So around 2011 is back.
That sounds about right. And I have like blog posts, and I'm now like on my own site trying to find like when exactly that happens. But yeah,
you've been around a while, and you've been around a while, and you followed obviously a good bit of the journey of WordPress being used as an e-commerce platform. But it sounds like you've gotten pretty well into e-commerce over the years. Did you initially go to work at Woo with the anticipation of doing e-commerce stuff? Is that your background prior?
Before WooThemes, I did all sorts of websites. And that was even before I did WordPress stuff. I did all sorts of custom e-commerce websites, which is the worst. Like building an integration with PayPal 10 years ago was 8 hours of painful API docs. I don't want to do that again. But I did have a history with e-commerce even back before I got into WordPress. But I didn't... I think I just saw WooCommerce as a way for people to start their own businesses. And I don't like, I'm a fan of anything that lets people manifest destiny, anything that lets them like do something cool with their lives. And e-commerce is one of the coolest things you can do. So yeah, I'm kind of a fan of it.
But you really, in terms of getting your initial feet wet, I guess, really seeing e-commerce up front was the time that you spent as the product manager for WooCommerce, right?
So I've interacted with WooCommerce in 5 ways now. So before I joined WooThemes, I built WooCommerce sites for clients. Then I joined WooThemes and I was a support technician. Then I was a developer. Then I was product manager, and now I'm creating online courses on WooCommerce. So I think I've seen every side of it. I don't think there's a side of it I haven't seen, But yeah, I got really deep into it when I was working at WooCommerce. One of the things that I did was every day I would try to find one ticket that was insanely hard. Like, hey, can I do this thing where I customize this, this, and this? And normally you say, hey, this is out of our support policy. We can't do that because you're busy. You have a lot of stuff to do. Mm-hmm. But I would try to find one ticket a day and I would answer that ticket and it might take me 3 or 4 hours, but then I wrote it up as a blog post. And I think that really helped me get, just understand like every little bit of WooCommerce, like all the code, I made lots of changes like, hey, you couldn't do this, but now that I've looked into it, we should have a filter there. I added the filter. It'll come out in the next release of WooCommerce. And here's a snippet that'll let you use that filter. So just in a couple weeks, this will work. Like I think that's what really got me going was spending, a couple hours a day digging into really tough issues.
And it seems like through that process, you developed an empathy for the store owner out there that's trying to wrangle together their website and their e-commerce experience.
Yeah, I think it's hard not to, I guess. I mean, I guess, I just mean... when you hear,
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit on that. I think
well,
a lot of
you.
People, it would be easy to, take someone's money for a plugin or something like that, and then only be so concerned in terms of how well that ends up working for them.
Yeah, I think it's, I guess I myself am a someone has one of my friends has described me as a curmudgeon. And I go, why doesn't this work? And why doesn't this work? And I just want to take out all of those problems for other people. So, when you open up an app and a good example. I just got a new phone. It's like the new Galaxy. It's not the one that sets on fire. It's the one after that.
The S8.
And I can, for the life of me, the UI on how to play a voicemail is so confusing that I just have stopped listening to voicemails on that phone. And I just want to remove that pain for other users. So whenever I see a user test or a case study of how, one of my favorite ones was I asked a friend to install subscriptions and it took him about 20, 30 minutes to get the plugin installed before he even got to subscriptions. And we made some changes afterwards about what happens and all this stuff. But I think when you are standing over a friend's shoulder and they can't use this thing that you designed, I think it's important to think about what they're going through and try to make the software as usable as possible.
Do you think that e-commerce on WordPress specifically, but I guess broader in a broader sense as well, has done a good job of making it accessible to your average person?
Oh God, yes. I think WooCommerce especially, but also all the other platforms out there have made e-commerce as simple as, you can sign up for a Shopify account in a few minutes. WordPress takes a teensy bit longer, or WooCommerce takes a teensy bit longer, but not much. And especially with things like the Welcome Wizard, it is so easy now to set up a store, which is why there's, I don't remember how many, but like a million plus WooCommerce stores out there. It's just so easy. And I think that brings up an interesting point. Now that there's like fewer technical barriers, there's a lot more competition out there. So e-commerce is sort of like the technical level has gotten a little bit easier, but there's more competition. So you have to do other stuff marketing wise to get people to your site and there other stuff happens. But in terms of technical stuff, it gets easier every single day.
One of the things I've noticed as I've dug more into the e-commerce space is that your average store owner, they really only want to think about platform to the degree that it is working. And they have a lot of other stuff that they're thinking about, whether that's product sourcing or product creation, mm-hmm. or inventory management in general, or order fulfillment processes and all the things, marketing, inbound marketing, getting people to the website and converting. Do you think it's a good thing for the store or the platform to play a central role in all of that? Or is it better when the website is kind of a set it and forget it type of thing?
Can you give me a little bit more detail there? What do you mean for the website or for like the platform to be a central role?
So you know how someone's managing their business, right? So they get a visitor, they get an order, they fulfill the order, and then they do stuff with it. Well, in e-commerce, you have to like mark an order as complete, and you know, it sends emails based on that, and it there's all these things, there's all these interactions that happen. It seems to me that e-commerce platforms, they like for those experiences to exist on the website. Yeah. And sometimes I wonder whether it's really necessary that that stuff is on the website versus on someone's app of choice. And the website is more of a connection point than like a store management center. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's okay. So I think the way I'm visualizing this is like you could do all of your order fulfillment in like a separate app, and then that would trigger emails and yet another separate app that would send them to the person, as opposed to you have your one single website, patrickswidgets.com, and that controls everything. I think you can get all these separate components, and I think that's actually very WordPressy, is to like build everything from like you use MailChimp for your newsletter, and use an SMTP plugin, and you use a contact form plugin, and you have all these different little things that do things exactly the way you want it. But I do think that there are a lot of things that people don't care about, and SMTP plugins is exactly that. Like most people just want their emails to work, and they don't care how the emails work. So I think it's one of those things where I think certain things are too complex, and they are not worth digging into the details. And then it's great when a platform handles that. Like I would love if, here's an idea, WordPress, WordPress.com automatic people, like if Jetpack could be an SMTP plugin, that would be amazing. That would be like, people just don't have to worry about it. Jetpack's installed, it's activated, and all your emails just work. Oh, that'd be great. But I guess other things, there are other things like, yeah, like your order emails, you want to style them in a certain way. And it can be annoying that the platform can be in your way.
Or take like ShipStation, for example.
Yep.
The person managing the warehouse, if you will, or like, they receive an order and then they might want to interact just with ShipStation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder, is a store owner like, would they rather just be in ShipStation? Because then you might have to go and then mark your orders complete or manage other things in other places. You know what I mean? And each element of a store can just get so deep.
Yeah.
So a thing like shipping, or a thing like taxes, or mm-hmm. a thing, all sorts of stuff. I think product management. Like, what if you're doing drop shipping and you're syncing your inventory? You're syncing your product catalog. There's just so much complex stuff in e-commerce, and it just makes me wonder, like, what you've encountered in terms of working with store owners and trying to figure out what's important.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming, and I just always recommend that people start with like the simplest thing possible. I know at a certain point stores grow, and then you want to use solutions like ShipStation, right? Where like all of your shipping goes through ShipStation, especially when you start selling on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, whatever. Then you almost have to have these other apps that manage like one tiny aspect of your business, just the shipping.
And I think that's partly why I ask about it, is because typically when you talk about your website, that's only one vertical for how you sell your stuff. Like you might be selling on Amazon and Etsy and your website and in a retail brick and mortar store. So that's, I wonder how often we're thinking about that when we're building solutions for someone's website, that we're only solving the problem, if you will, for a quarter of the situations where someone might be buying something.
I think you're right. I think there are often times where we build a website first, and then we think about, oh yeah, how do we also sync inventory with your retail location? And then you have to like add on another app. Hold on, I'm blanking. There's a whole bunch of inventory management apps. I can't think of the one, Stitch Labs, there we go. I can't think of the one I was thinking of, but yeah, you do have to like add these third-party apps, and it can be a little bit putzy. But I do think that's one of those things that you kind of have to figure out as you go. It's like, it's the type of thing where it's probably best just to start with a simple website and selling your product there. And let's say you do sell on Amazon, There is an awesome Amazon plugin, actually by one of the people that talks at Liftoff Summit. Ken Kelly makes it, and it just syncs everything with Amazon FBA. So your website's still the central hub, and then your website syncs everything with Amazon FBA, and you don't have to worry about inventory issues. I just think it is, there's so much to worry about with e-commerce. You cannot design the perfect system from the ground up unless you've already built an e-commerce site previously. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are most of the people that you've worked with over the years new store owners? Is that, well, multiple questions. One, is that the typical person that was coming in through support channels and interactions with from Automatic and WooCommerce? And then secondarily, since then, the type of people that you've been interacting with?
Yeah, I think especially talking about support, I think a lot of the people are building. And you know what? Maybe this is like the people that send in support tickets are the type of people that are first time store owners, because they haven't, you know, figured out I need a SMTP plugin. But yeah, I think most of the people there are first time store owners, and they are figuring things out. Like people don't know the difference between like Stripe and authorized.net. And before you start talking about super complicated inventory management systems, they need to figure out how to get paid simply online. So it's just a huge learning curve. And now speaking to people that I work with after the fact, it might still be their first e-commerce store. They've just been running it for a few years. I talked to someone yesterday. They've had 6 different developers work on their WooCommerce store. So there's like each developer has made like one tiny mistake, but then it's been compounded by the next developer. So they're kind of, you know, they have their own unique set of challenges, but it is technically their first store. They just had it for a few years and now it has some legacy code in it and some stuff like that.
What do you think once someone's going from being a beginner to maybe they're making $500,000 in revenue and that results in them taking home $50,000 or $75,000. You know, it's like it starts to be a full-time job. And I think that's first off one of the things like our average listener on this podcast might surprise them that someone doing $500,000 revenue might hardly be paying themselves yet. But when people get to that point, you're obviously managing a lot. You're managing however many orders that ends up being a day. It depends on your average order volume and all that. But still, it's a lot of responsibility, a lot of money, a lot of stuff that's happening. What become the worries of these types of folks, these types of store owners?
I think one of the biggest worries, especially as you're especially we're at the point where it is just about a full-time job. I think one of your biggest worries is like cash flow, which is something that we are so blessed with in the online world. If you sell digital products, like cash flow is not a problem. People pay you online.
Because you're not buying stuff.
Yeah.
Like you're not paying for stuff so that you can make money off of it.
Yeah. Okay. So let me give you an example here. If I sell an ebook on my website for $10 and someone buys it today, they get the ebook immediately and it costs me a fraction of a penny to send it via SMTP or whatever. So I pay virtually nothing for fulfillment and I get paid on Stripe like within a week. Like there's almost no cash flow issue. When you are buying stuff, especially when you're working with retailers, they have 90 terms. So you, even if someone bought the thing in store today, you would get paid for it 90 days later. But of course, before that, you have to send it into them. That might take a week or a month. And then before that, you have to either make the product or get it shipped in from China. That could take you a month or a week or however long, depending on if you're making it or where you're getting it shipped in from. And then you have to order it before that. So that might take, you know, a month or 3 months to make all the 10,000 units. So one of the people at Liftoff Summit talks about this. They talk about sometimes you need to expect like 9 months worth of, if you buy 10,000 widgets today, you might not get paid for those 10,000 widgets until 6 or 9 months from now, which is really, really challenging.
That is definitely scary. I think a lot of times when people consider, oh, well, you know, someone's product is in a retail store, oftentimes they would think, well, that means the retail store bought their product up front in order for it to be in their store. I'm sure, I know there's some of that, but in this scenario, like you're talking about, the retail store is really just a shelf that that product maker is putting something on, right?
Yeah. So we have someone, I talked to someone just recently who sells, it's like a little widget. I love that word right now. It's this little thing that you stick on the side of your controller that like turns your TV on and off. So like you stick it on the side of your Roku or your Apple TV. So it like just turns the TV on and off. And then the main controller controls the Apple TV. And they've been in business for like 3 years, but I don't think they're profitable yet. And they're in Best Buy. They're in Best Buy, but they have so many weird cash flow issues that they're on the road to being profitable, and they're at this good break even point. But it's been I think like 2 or 3 years, and working at or you know getting they're on the shelves of Best Buy, and they still haven't quite made it yet. It's a weird process. Yeah.
So what do you think makes an e-commerce business enticing to get into or valuable compared to other types of business, say more traditional stuff like consulting?
So especially in the online world, there's always, and I hear, you know, I thought people stopped saying this. And then literally yesterday I heard someone say, I want to help people make money in their sleep. And there is something like magical about that idea. And I like that, right? That you, especially selling info products, that's very attractive. But I think the thing that's nice about e-commerce is you have, especially if you make your own product, you have this thing that's yours. And I generally think that people that own things in the world sort of have the power to make the decision. So if you have a patent, okay, so on my desk, I have these things. There are these, what are they called? They have a weird name. They're called hickeys. They're just like shoelaces, they're like shoelaces you don't have to tie. But this guy has a patent on them who makes them, sells them on Amazon and on his website. And he can decide the price. He's a patent on them. He can do whatever he wants. He can choose the colors. He can improve the design. He can get order 100,000 at a time or 1 million at a time. But you just have this amazing flexibility with your business, and you own this thing, and that's something that someone can't copy from you. And I think that's at least someone can't copy without, you know, getting into legal issues. I think that's really powerful versus, I think, you know, if you're a freelance web developer, you know, there's how many, like in any city you're in, I'm in Denver, there's probably 1,000 WordPress people here in Denver that I would have to compete against if I wanted to sell my services. And that's tiring.
Yeah. What about in terms of making something valuable for the long term, like something that could then be sold? Are e-commerce businesses often worth something?
So that's not an area that I talk about much, or because I haven't dealt with that. But there's a couple episodes on Tropical MBA where they talk about selling their business, and I'm pretty sure it was kind of, you know, the kind of the standard thing where it's either a year to a year and a half of profit is what you can sell your business for. So going back to your example of if you have $500,000 in revenue and you can pay yourself $50,000, then if you were to sell that business, you might get something like a year's worth of profit. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't seem right.
Maybe you end up with $50,000 to $100,000. So less than your overall revenue by a long shot.
But I mean, it is, especially when you get things. Okay, the cool thing is there's a lot of stuff you can outsource and scale with e-commerce. So I'm just trying to think like, so let's say you build an awesome e-commerce business. I don't think I would want to sell mine. Like once you have fulfillment down, especially if you're using something like Amazon FBA, you just pay them a small fee and they take care of it. And once you have people in your warehouse that pack all the stuff for you, and once you have people that answer the phones for you, and once you've built this thing, it is kind of a machine that runs on its own, which is really, really cool and doesn't require much input from you.
So your flexibility in life might be a little better.
Yeah.
What do you think in terms of stuff we're making for e-commerce owners? Where do you think we're lacking in terms of platform and tooling type of stuff?
That's a good question. I think I'd like to see, so as I said earlier, things that users don't care about, SMTP plugins. Like I just take care of that for me. I would love more services like that. One of the things I like that's built into Shopify that I hope WooCommerce will adopt is like built in is like, hey, we think this order is fraudulent. Stuff like that is insanely useful and usually doesn't matter. Like most stores don't have to deal with that, at least not right away. But on the off chance that one of your first couple orders is fraudulent, it's nice to have that technology built in and you don't worry about it. And actually, it's basically invisible until you get a fraudulent order. And then you can, you know, it's like highlighted in a different color or whatever. I think I'd like to see more stuff that's there when you need it and not there when you don't need it, or an invisible when you don't need it.
Mm. So some the stuff that sends you a notification when it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like that.
Interesting.
You know, that just reminded me of, I'd also like, one of the things that I care a lot about is just marketing for e-commerce, just because I think a lot of people have the build it and they will come mentality. And I totally understand where that comes from. I think a lot of people spend thousands of dollars on a store and don't spend more than 10 minutes thinking about how people are going to arrive at the store. I think I'd like to see more services, maybe even in the WordPress space, like, hey, I will help you generate traffic for your WooCommerce store. I would love to see stuff like that. Hmm.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit more about how you plan to help stores with some of your conference stuff. I'd like to dig into a little bit about that. But first, I want to take a quick break to thank a sponsor for this episode. Our partner is Pagely, and I happen to run my e-commerce business on Pagely's servers. It's fully run on AWS, and it's incredibly reliable, and they manage so much for me so that I don't have to worry about it, like you're talking about. Pagely's been doing managed WordPress hosting as long as anyone, and they're a really great option if you're ready to take your e-commerce store kind of to the next level of hosting and really rely on someone else to be your partner in that endeavor and not deal with a lot of the things that you have to deal with when you do typical WordPress hosting and website management. Pagely's got you covered. Good friends of mine. And they've been doing it a long time. They understand the eccentricities of running e-commerce on WordPress as well, so they can help you take care of that. And they're always just a quick support message away if you ever need a hand. So go to Pagely.com to check them out. And thank you to Pagely for being a Postatus partner. So you've got Liftoff Summit coming up.
Yeah.
And tell me first off, why did you call it Liftoff Summit? I have a feeling you're targeting a certain thing with that name.
I have this silly little tagline when I start these little videos, and it says, it's like, we help you choose the marketing channels to get your store off the ground. So it's just one, rockets are cool. And two, the whole idea is like, you've built this beautiful thing, but it's sitting on a launch pad and I want to help you, you know, shoot it into space.
What kind of, if people are going to check the conference out, what should they expect in terms of the type of content that it's going to have?
So first of all, it is free. So if you wanted to just check it out, you should do that. It's free. You can just go to this website and click the sign up button, get a free ticket button. But in terms of the content, there's a lot of stuff. One of the things that's cool and that I like doing is I love getting WordPress people that you know and love from the WordPress world. You know, there's a Mr. Lemma there. There's a Rebecca Gill there. There's a few people that very well-known people in the WordPress space. And there's a few people that come from outside of the WordPress space, and I like that blend. So there's Talia Wolf, who talks about conversion rate optimization. And there's Paul Jarvis, who's like known in the freelancer world, not quite in the WordPress world. But there's a lot of awesome people there. And then I basically do, it's about a 40-minute interview, and I talk about, each speaker talks about one channel. So Chris Lemma talks about building trust. And that's all we talk about the entire time, is like, how do you convince someone that you're trustworthy? And we have a 40-minute discussion on that. Paul Jarvis talks about newsletter. Rebecca Gill talks about SEO. Basically, every single speaker talks about one channel, one possible way to get people to your store.
And then each day is a vertical. So Monday is content strategy, Tuesday is social. Then you have unique channels. What do you mean by that one?
Yeah, unique channels is kind of like the junk drawer in the kitchen. I apologize. they It's like you got a hammer, you got scotch tape, and you got thumbtacks. Like, they don't really go together, kind of. But that's that's affiliate marketing, which is totally different. Kickstarter, which is also a very weird way to get started, but is some e-commerce companies launch every single product on Kickstarter now. Retail locations. And then I have one final one that's sort of just general PPC strategy that applies to Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So
it's kind of the customer onboarding day.
Kind of.
Bringing them in.
Yeah.
Did I just rename it? And then you've got marketplaces, so people can learn about Amazon versus Etsy, and then a wholesale element, and then local events. The wholesale element is interesting to me. Actually, the first e-commerce store I ever built was also required to be able to support wholesalers to log in and pay separately. So I built this thing for it. I should have productized it way back then because it was like 2011 or something, like literally right when WooCommerce came out.
Yeah.
That would have been smart of me. Yeah. And then keeping your customers, which is a really interesting thing. This is something I hear about a ton in the e-commerce landscape, is how much cheaper it is to sell to existing customers versus bring new customers on.
I think it's irresponsible to have an entire conference on generating traffic if you don't spend like 5% of the time, or in this case, I guess it's a whole day, so 20% of the time talking about how you keep them. Because one of the people I interviewed was Talia, I'm pretty sure. She said that, yeah, the stat she has is it's 5 times harder to get a new customer than maintain a relationship with an existing one. So once you've done all the work of the first 4 days, like, spend 20% of your time just maintaining those relationships. And basically everyone there talks about how you can maintain relationships. And Nathan Berry actually has a whole talk on customer retention. It's basically newsletter marketing specifically for customer retention. And he talks a lot about personalization, which I thought was really cool, because I made the faulty assumption that you have to write entirely new content for existing customers, and he proves otherwise. So that was that's a big time saver.
Entirely new content for existing customers?
Yeah, that's what I assumed. And he's like, nope, I use like these tags, and I make sure that if they're already a customer, it hides this. And if they're not a customer, then it shows this. So wow. He basically writes one email, you know, let's just say per week, and it goes out to everyone, and he just uses tags to personalize it.
Oh, I see. So it's kind of conditional within the content.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like
that. I noticed that one of the things that you don't really have here at all is like WordPress specific stuff. Like, there's not tools of the trade type of stuff as much as it is strategic type of elements. What was your purpose in that?
Yeah. I have a WordPress background, and I'd say 2/3 of the speakers are from the WordPress world. So people are talking about, so Rebecca Gill talks about Yoast and getting green bullets. And if you've used Yoast SEO, you know what she's talking about. So people are going to talk about stuff, but the point isn't the tools, because the tools always change. I always think back to like MySpace and Facebook. Like, MySpace was like amazing one day, and then the next year, Facebook was amazing and everyone stopped using MySpace. So I tend to think that the tool is not as important as the strategy behind it. So when you're talking about content marketing, we're definitely talking a lot about WordPress. But it's not like you need to use this plugin. It's more like, hey, use these techniques so that you maintain customers, or just make sure you can schedule posts. But we don't talk about specific plugins.
Right. So since you've gone out on your own, I'm sure life is a lot different, because you're not clocking in a sense and working on someone else's behalf, doing the things that are the priorities of the company. It's whatever the priority is to get you enough revenue so you don't have to go get a job, right? Mm-hmm. How has that changed life for you, and how has it made you more understanding of how other like e-commerce store owners live?
Boy, well, so a lot of things have changed. So I'm about nine months on my own, and I'm still not at the point where I'm still not making as much money as I made when I was at Automattic. And I'd like to get to that point, but it's still a ways off. So there is a lot more flexibility, and my first priority was ramen profitable. And if you're in the startup world, you probably know what that means. It means like, I want to cover all my bills. I can't go out and get fancy meals, but like I can pay my mortgage and I can at least buy ramen. And actually I hit that point basically in March, and that's when I really kicked up my work on Liftoff Summit. So I always wanted to do my own thing, but I was so terrified of doing it and it failing that that I didn't pursue it for the first 9 months. And now that I'm at the ramen profitable stage, if this thing makes $0, then I can still eat and I'm fine. And it feels very good to, I'm very happy to have made that call. So my online courses about WooCommerce and some other, and WordPress plugins like SEO plugins and analytics and stuff like that, pay the bills. And now I'm focusing more on my own, entirely my own content on my own site, and trying to do things that I think are important, even if they don't make me money.
So what have you put together in order to get to ramen profitable? Like, what, you have multiple revenue streams, it seems. So one, how did you decide those? And then, and what are they?
I am risk adverse. And that meant that before I left my job, I had a rough plan of how to make up all that money. And I had a course called WordPress e-commerce on lynda.com, which is now LinkedIn Learning. And that thing had been making, a couple $100 every month for over a year. And when I saw that I could make a single course that makes a couple $100 every month for a year, I knew that if I left my job, and they were very, and LinkedIn, the guys there, they like me. So they said, hey, Patrick, we'd love to have more courses just about WordPress e-commerce content. So I knew I'd be able to make courses for them. I knew each one would make me a couple $100. So if I just have something like 10 courses, I can get to that ramen profitable stage. And that's basically what I spent the first six to nine months doing, as well as a teensy bit of consulting on the side. I was working with a software client before. Now I'm working with, and this feels really good. Automattic asked me to help them put on WooConf this year. They're like, hey, Patrick, you know, nice. E-commerce. Yep. We would like you to like talk to like people in the e-commerce space and ask them to come, you know, I'm basically arranging the content for the conference. So I'm helping them. And that's sort of closing that last gap. Like that's the thing that pushes me a little bit over ramen profitable. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
And beyond the conference, what's next for you? Like, what's on your radar in terms of your own journey, entrepreneurial journey?
Oh man, I have too many ideas. How about this? I will tell you some long term goals that I'm pretty sure I'll move towards. So, one of them is I think you can only learn so much from reading and like education, like reading about or watching a video about a certain thing. I think there is certain types of knowledge that you can only gain by experiencing it. And I think for me to be even better, I love e-commerce, and for me to jump even deeper, I need to make my own product. It'll probably be a nerdy board game of some sort. And I don't need to like make a fortune with it, but I do need to understand the basics and market that product and ship that product and deal with taxes with the product and maybe try wholesaling that product to game stores and yada, yada, yada. I just think it's important to have that lived experience in addition to the academic experience. So I probably at some point want to make a product of some sort. I'm not quite sure what yet, but I'm just going to keep doing these types of things until I find... Yeah, until I find what that product is.
I completely understand, and I've had this sentiment many times. It's bold of you to be willing to say it out there on a podcast. So I look forward to following through with you to see what that is. So you've got kind of three different things that you're doing. I guess I do want to follow up a little bit more about the product because I'm just thinking about it. Is why do you think it's different when you're experiencing it yourself versus when you're advising on it or you're helping someone get set up? I know you're living it, but is it because you're experiencing problems like post-launch, like you're beyond that kind of initial surge of excitement when someone launches a store, or what element of it?
I think it's the emotional element that you, when you read about someone's recap of their store or their launch or their marketing plan, and it actually, this reminds me of some of the stuff that Corey from iThemes talks about, where people tend to only post like the top 10% of the most awesome moments of their lives. And I think even we, and I'm guilty of that in some of my own posts, where I tend to highlight the good stuff instead of the stuff that went wrong. And I think there's also this emotional element. So do you know, okay, good example. Do you know how you have a friend and the friend's like, oh my God, this person is amazing, and all of your friends think that person is like a terrible life partner for you, but you think because your experience, you have all these like emotions and hormones running through you that they're like the best ever, and all of your friends can totally, they're telling you and they're like, no, she's really not, or they're really not. And then maybe it takes you a week, a month, or years, and eventually you go, oh, you have to have, there's like a right distance. And I think, and maybe with relationships, you can be too close. But with learning about e-commerce, I think you can be too far away. And even though it's like all the facts are in front of you, you're in an emotional space. Like if I were to put on Liftoff Summit without being ramen profitable, if I had to pay my bills with this, I would have approached it in a totally different way. I would have spammed Twitter, would have spammed Facebook. And I feel like I'm trying to do it in a way that is integrity with who I am as a person. And I can only do that because I'm in like a solid state. And I think, yeah, like launching your own online store is like a scary thing. And there's just things that you won't understand. Like spending $100 on Facebook is so much harder when it's your money instead of a client's money. And I think you just have to live those things to know what they're like.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, sometimes it amazes me when I realize the degree of trust that clients put into their consultants by writing some big check to help them solve a problem.
Yeah,
and it does give me more understanding for why then, that because they've put that trust there, that they then are, they have expectations, you know, for stuff to pay off. So it's when you're going through it, when you're in the trenches of that, of trying to make ends meet with your own business, spending money does become a different conversation versus when it's corporate money, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I'm happy I did with Liftoff Summit was I have like pre-summit pricing. And what's exciting about that is one of the reasons for that is once we get one or two sales, we now have a team, like we know people will spend some money on it, and now it makes sense for us to like do advertising. And that's like once we get one or two sales, you know, pre-summit, now we can advertise to everyone else, knowing that there is value there. And that's so much better than having to spend money on advertising before there's like a product, right? I think that's one of the reasons that we did it that way, because it's less scary for us. It was way less scary to spend money once we know money's coming in. But to spend money before you know it's coming in, that is scary.
Yep. I know that feeling too. And that's, like you mentioned earlier, that's one of the things that e-commerce store owners have to deal with and can be frightening. Do you have any other tips that you would recommend for somebody that's interested in owning their own store, or maybe someone wants to be like you? Maybe they're an e-commerce consultant and they're listening to this podcast and they've never run their own store. Do you have any advice for folks of what they should keep in mind, or maybe something they should try?
Yeah, I think the best. So as we said in the beginning, e-commerce is so complex. And if you try to make like a master spreadsheet to figure out the perfect platform or the perfect shipping service or the perfect payment gateway, you're just not ever going to finish anything. And I think you have to start with baby steps. And I guarantee you, you will make thousands of mistakes and you just have to correct it the next time it comes up. But I think you just have to jump in. And I think that's probably my advice for life in general. But I think with e-commerce, it's so big, so complex that if you try to figure it all out ahead of time and come up with a perfect proposal for a client, you're just going to spend 100 hours and then they're going to turn down the proposal. Versus if you say, hey, we're going to start here, Mr. Client, or Mrs. Client, we're going to start here. And based on this first proposal, which is going to last a month, then we're going to, you know, create some follow-up stuff and figure out all the details later. I think you just have to start.
I agree. That's good advice. All right, cool. Thanks for joining me. Why don't we finish with you letting us know how can people go to Liftoff Summit and then keep up with you in general?
Cool. So if you want to attend Liftoff Summit, it is June 19th through the 23rd, and it is at liftoffsummit.com. You just go there and you click this button that says claim my free ticket, and it has a rocket on it. I put a rocket on there. There's a rocket. And if you sign up, there is a sweet GIF in the welcome email. I'm telling you, we have literally gotten comments on Twitter about the sweet GIF. So go sign up just for the sweet GIF.
And if somebody's listening to this after it happens, is it something they can watch for money or anything after the fact?
Yeah, so it's free the week of, and it's free the week of, and you can watch all the content there. Or anytime after that, we will definitely still sell it. I'm going to be honest, I have not planned that part yet because that's a week and a half away. And that's a problem that future Patrick has to deal with. But
there will be some way to access these videos down the road.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll figure that out.
Cool. And then I have to give you a shout out for your personal blog. I think you've done a really nice job of kind of sharing your journey of entrepreneurship, especially some of the things that you go through and what you don't expect. I think one of the ones that you talked about was how you didn't realize, like, you got to go make all those courses and then you got to wait for the courses to actually get people in and then you get paid down the road.
That was so stressful. I remember that. And because I just forgot, because so the first course I made was like in 2015. So when I left maybe it was in 2014, whatever. It was like over a year before I left Automatic. And I had forgotten that I basically just had to pay back in advance. But that was like several thousand dollars that I was, counting on that I didn't have access to until I paid off the advance. And that's one of those lived experiences. Boy, I can feel my heart beating faster just now remembering that.
But I appreciate your honesty that you have in your blog. So people should also check that out at speakinginbytes.com. And then you tweet and stuff. So yeah, where do they do that?
Stuff. It's at BF Trick. I'm basically at BF Trick anywhere on the web because it's a unique handle. So yeah, that's me. And one thing, Speaking in Bytes is BYTES, like computer bytes, because I'm clever.
Clever, so that you get to explain that every time you say it.
Yes, that's, yeah, that was fair. That was fair.
Cool. And people, you've obviously had a strategic hand in the content for WooConf October 19th and 20th in Seattle. So go to WooConf.com for that. And while you're conference attending, go to postatus.com/publish and check out the Publish Conference, which is August 3rd and 4th in Atlanta. I'm really excited about it. Actually, just got back from Atlanta. I went to go visit a meetup to promote the conference and talk to some of those folks there. So that was a lot of fun.
And Brian, aren't you going to plug one of the people that's e-commerce related at your event?
Yes. And e-commerce fans, you should. Nice one. There are actually several talks to do with e-commerce, but Andrew Udarian is one that I'm really excited about. He runs E-commerce Fuel, which is a really great community for folk store owners and stuff. And he has a really good podcast, and he's just a really smart person that's sold, I think, two different e-commerce businesses and wrote most recently like 8,000 words about it, the process of selling that business. And he's extremely smart. I'm excited to have him take part. Also on the e-commerce front, we've got Becca Rice and Brent Shepard. They run Skyverge and Prospress respectively, which if you've not heard of them, that's okay, but you probably use their code if you use WooCommerce because they make some of the most popular extensions on the platform. So really excited to learn from them as well.
And sell with WP.
Yes, and sell with WP, a good e-commerce blog. Good point. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And that's in Atlanta, August 3rd and 4th. You can get your tickets. You only have a little bit of time before the early bird ticket pricing runs out. So go ahead and do that now. All right. We'll catch y'all next time. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Thanks.